This is the Pile of Man Hillbillies, episode number 7 for April the 3rd, 2006.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know what the honorable member has been smoking or taking. The fact is...
Welcome to the Parliament Hillbillies, your podcast for Canadian politics. I'm Alex, and Jeremy's not here right now, but we're going to give him a call on Google Chat. Just hang on.
Hello?
Hey, Jeremy. This is Alex from the Parliament Hillbillies.
Hey, man. How's it going? Are we going to do the podcast?
Yeah, we're going to do the podcast, man. We got lazy this week, and you didn't want to, like, walk over to my place, so... This is the best plan. That's true.
I guess that means it's my cue to say, if you have any comments, please leave them on the blog. You can find us at phbo.blogspot.com.
Well, today on the show, we're going to talk about a few things, but since we're like not in the studio together, we haven't really had a chance to collaborate that much, so we're just going to toss out the articles in a like rapid-fire scrum. What do you say?
Sounds good. So, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, so I guess the top story is that Parliament kicks off today, or has kicked off.
Yeah, that's right.
So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I started watching it this morning. Basically, at 11 o'clock, they started. What happened, first of all, was that they all convene in the House of Commons chambers, and then the usher of the Black Rod walks in, and he invites them to go to the Senate, and they arrive in the Senate, and I believe it's the Governor General. There's no cameras allowed in the Senate traditionally, so I'm not sure, but I believe it's the Governor General. She tells them to go back to House of Commons and elect a Speaker of the House. And so that's the stage that we're at as we speak. They're counting the ballots. There's three people that put forward nominations for the Speaker of the House. And they're both, all three of them are Liberals. And one of them is, of course, Peter Milliken, who was the Speaker of the House last year.
Yeah, he's the guy that, like, is really sarcastic and, you know.
Yeah,
he's like,
and
you know,
we're rooting for him, or at least I am.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, he's a good guy. You know, it'd always be like some speaker or some member would get up and be all like, "The honorable member opposite is a frigger," and then you know everyone in the House would erupt, and then the speaker would get up and he'd be like, "Now, you know, I'd like to have some order here. You know, I want to get some order. You know, I'm sure the honorable member wants to hear the like. I'm sure we all want to hear the like conclusion to the question, like, which is total sarcasm because obviously no one like wants to hear it."
Yeah, he's a good guy. But I got to say that there was sort of an omen today that maybe this is going to be a sort of rambunctious House of Commons session. And that's when the usher of the Black Rod he invited everyone to go over to the Senate, and the MP started heckling him. And they're all like, "Why do we have to go over there? They're just going to send us back." And so that was kind of funny.
Who did that?
I don't know. I don't know where it was coming from, like which side of the house, but there was a whole bunch. Not a whole bunch, but like a handful, maybe a dozen people. And they're all like saying stuff and yelling stuff.
That's like...
It was kind of funny.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping for a bit of a rambunctious house because it's always fun to listen to. And like, it's going to be good for our purposes because like we'll have all the juicy quotes like to put on the show at the end of the week.
Yeah, maybe we should say that we're changing our format for hopefully next week. And we're going to include more clips from question period and that type of thing. So
yeah, so like instead of just focusing on news stories, we're going to like focus more on the parliament and then maybe like throw in like news stories as they come. But, you know, the usual tripe that like the bottom of the barrel scraping that we've been doing like in the last like month of slow news, like we can put an end to that, like, you know, start scraping the bottom of the barrel of question period, you know, like this is the leader MP of like some place in Quebec, you know, they get up and they're like, you know, but yeah, it's gonna be good because then we can get like, you know, start making fun of the translators because they're always fun to make fun of.
They're pretty good.
It's like, you know, It's like, Mr. Speaker, I would remind the honorable member that there is no acts of extraordinary rendition at any time in the history of the government that we are aware of, and that, you know.
Yeah, they start off really slow, and then they get really fast.
They get their stride on.
As the question ends.
Yeah, they have a hard job, but, like, you know, it's really cool because you see them in the parliament, and they're like, you know, they got these little, like, you know those, like, big rapper headphones that, like, the hip-hop kids, like, wear, right? Yeah. The big Sony headphones, right? They got headphones like that, only they, like, use them on their mouth, right? And so they're, like, the big rapper headphones, only that's, like, their microphone. So they put it, like, instead of over their ear, they put it over their mouth, and then they, like, talk into it kind of thing. So
I didn't realize that they actually sat in the chamber. But that's
I'm not sure if they're actually the translators, but I think that they are. So yeah. I'm kind of confused because, like, they actually have these people that sit at a desk in the middle of the aisle that have these, like, you know, rapper headphones that they're speaking into, and so I assume that those are the translators, as opposed to, like, in the UN when they're, like, in the little booths. Like, do you see that Nicole Kidman movie in, like,
the, I didn't see it, but
the booths, you know?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, okay.
So, anyway, I guess we'll find out Wednesday when we actually go through the opening question period.
Yeah, so, okay, so the way it works is, okay, today was the Speaker of the House getting elected.
Right.
Tomorrow is the speech from the throne, and that's when Parliament officially, I guess, like, starts. Or no, I guess today officially starts, but tomorrow, like, the first business will start to happen.
Yeah.
And there won't be a question period on that day. I was reading the parliamentary procedure. And so that makes Wednesday the first question period. And we're going to be going. We got tickets. Called up Paul Dewar's, like, parliamentary office, and the nice lady there mailed us tickets, you know. And so hopefully we'll be able to, like, I don't know, take notes at least. We can't, like, take in a recording device of any kind. Yeah. Or,
we'll hear it after, like, the recording.
On the podcast, sure.
Yeah, if anyone's interested, you can get a podcast of House of Commons from cpac.ca.
Yeah, and they're always fun to listen to when you're walking the dog, which is how I listen to them. So,
anyway, I don't believe there's a question period Thursday either. I'm not sure where I picked that up from, but I believe Wednesday and Friday. I could be mistaken on that, but I think that's what we're looking at for this coming week.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. So
Okay, so the first piece of legislation is going to be the Accountability Act, and I'm not sure if we're going to see that this week or early next week. Probably early next week, I think, Stephen.
Would that be Bill C-1? Is that, like, how that's going to work?
C-1 is something different. It's like a formal bill that gets passed, I think.
Uh-huh.
Or it might be the throne speech, actually, or the acceptance of the throne speech. That might be C-1. I'm not sure. But it would be like C2 or C3 or something.
I'm sure Bill C4
is
sure to
be C4.
It's sure to be an explosive topic, like, you know.
Oh yes.
Anyway, let's get down to stories, man. Because
for it.
All right, so I've been convening, like, a big stack of newspapers, like, you know, with highlights on them from various, like, points in the week. Because I have my nice subscription to Ottawa Citizen, and, like, I come across stories that, like, are inflammatory that I like to talk about. So, Tuesday, former Smith star Morrissey likens seal hunt to Holocaust. I just want to say that Morrissey is a jackass, especially after he, like, compared the seal hunt to the Holocaust. Says Morrissey, construction of German gas chambers also provided work for someone. This is not a moral or sound reason for allowing suffering. I gotta say, like, that's just way over the top. I mean, he's just, I think, really doesn't understand not only the Holocaust, but he doesn't clearly understand the seal hunt either. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, well, knowing Morrissey, I think it was supposed to be over the top. I mean, he has a long history of saying really stupid things.
Yeah, what was that thing you told me about how he got investigated by the FBI or whatever?
Oh, yeah, apparently he said something about wishing death upon George W. Bush. I don't know exactly what the context was, but the FBI, like, investigated him, and then they realized he was just an obnoxious, loudmouth rock star. So
he also says that he's boycotting Canada by not holding his world tour, like, in our country. He says, I fully realize that the absence of any Morrissey concerts in Canada is unlikely to bring the Canadian economy to its knees, but it's our own small protest against this horrific slaughter. So anyways, to protest Morrissey's, like, you know, offensive comments on likening the Holocaust to the seal hunt, I went ahead and, like, deleted all my Smith's MP3s from my hard disk, you know, in my own personal boycott, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Actually, the day that he released that statement, I actually happened to be listening to his, one of his solo albums, You Are the Query, which came out, or Quarry, I don't know, it came out a year or two ago. And I gotta say that despite his political views, I still like his music.
Well, I mean, it's like a lot of bands, like, you know, I don't know, I guess I find it hard to separate political views from, like, the music, right? Like, you know, Metallica. I mean, I don't listen to them because I, like, really hate them as people. I mean, like, their views.
You can hear, like, the pro-industry coming through the drum beats.
Yeah, exactly. And A Perfect Circle kind of, like, really, I think they, you know, they got really political in, like, their most recent album. And, you know, it's sort of like, why don't you just stick to singing about drugs, which is, like, what you've been good at all along, you know? So, but anyways, Morrissey, he goes on to say that Canada has placed itself along China for the cruelest and most self-serving nation, likening them to China for, I guess, like, you know, China's criticism is human rights abuse. But, of course, you know, in case Morrissey doesn't, you know, isn't aware, like, seals are not humans, and so there's a difference there. But
actually, I think he's, like, he believes that animals, like, have the same rights as humans.
Yeah.
So it's at least self-consistent.
Okay, well, that's good for him then. So anyways, Nunavut's premier, Paul Kalik, came to its defense saying that it's a way of life for more than 30,000 Inuit people who live in this region. This is our daily basic diet. We can't grow potatoes, he told the Associated Press. So, and it's actually interesting because, you know, I just found out that, like, you know, my sister and brother-in-law will probably be moving up to Nunavut soon. And, you know, I think that they, you know, are, like, animal lovers by every standard of the term, but I mean, they also have to, you know, think about how they're going to feed themselves when they live there. I mean, especially considering how expensive everything is. Like, you know, you can't grow potatoes up there. It's an Arctic desert, right? So how do people survive, you know? Do they, I mean, seals are basically the only thing up there, I mean, as I understand it. So, you know, basically you can eat seals and you can eat fish, you know? So what, I mean, how's that any worse than, like, eating a burger if you're living in Nunavut, for example? So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the ejection is, like, the actual killing of them or if it's the way that they kill them.
Well, you know, he's...
Or a bit of both.
Yeah, he says that...
Not just him, but, like, people in general.
Yeah, well, Morrissey's talking about baby seals being killed with spike clubs. Now, first of all, as I understand it from what everyone's been saying, you know, in Canada regarding seal hunt, they don't kill baby seals and they don't use clubs except in, like, rare circumstances. Like, you know, the, like, you know, overwhelming majority are not clubbed. So,
really?
To my understanding,
there's a piece on Slate. They have, like, a column that was called The Explainer, and he was, like, explaining how they kill seals.
And
we'll link to it in the blog.
Okay.
I'd have to find it again, but here it is. Why do they club seals? Can't they just shoot them? And he goes on to explain that they traditionally don't shoot them because bullets can ricochet off the ice and hit people and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Except that that's not how I understand it to be, you know.
Yeah, he might be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I guess there's a lot of misinformation out there, like, in our, like, end, in Morrissey's end as well. But it's sort of like...
Yeah, I'll just read a little piece.
We're not celebrities, so it's sort of like, you know, it's not really newsworthy if we, like, shoot our mouth off, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know.
Yeah, so he's saying, basically, this article saying that the sealer will use a club if at all possible. That's because with these weapons, it's much easier to aim a blow directly to the seal pup's head.
Except they don't kill seal pups, at least. There's a law that says that you're not supposed to kill the seal pups. Like, I think it's like the way they, like, quantify if it's a pup as if it still has like white fur kind of thing, which I understand is not like a wholly like accurate way to like determine. But I think the law says that you're not allowed to kill white seals, which are basically usually associated with baby seals. So.
Okay, I don't know about that, but people can fact check this article. It seems to disagree with that interpretation. But.
Yeah. So anyways, maybe Morrissey like would, you know, like to come up with a way to support the like, you know, Inuit population in Nunavut, you know, so.
Yeah.
But I don't think that, like, he obviously doesn't care. Okay, so anyway, yeah, like next story. Presidential aide says Bush eager to meet with Prime Minister Martin. Did you see this?
No.
Yeah. The White House spokesman kept talking about like good relations with Canada.
I did hear it.
George W. Bush said he was keen to establish good relations with you know, Prime Minister Harper, only after saying like Prime Minister Martin three times in like the prior like paragraph. Yeah. Scott McClellan, press secretary.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a bit of a, I don't know.
The president, first of all, has had a good discussion with Prime Minister Martin yesterday. This is a call that Prime Minister Martin initiated after Prime Minister Martin won the election. But.
That's kind of funny. I know when George W. Bush came here, he also, there was like a press conference and he kept calling Paul Martin just Paul by his first name, as if he didn't know the last name, because traditionally you wouldn't do that. Like in a formal occasion, you refer to him as, you know, Mr. Martin or Prime Minister Martin. So, and then eventually an aide walked up and whispered something in his ear, and then he started calling Mr. Martin or Prime Minister Martin after that. So
that's quality. So yeah. Oh yeah. So okay. You know those two Canadian women from Thunder Bay that I think it was, yeah. They were like
the Mexico thing?
Yeah, implicated in the Mexican like murder in Cancun. Right. And they were like, I don't know, Vincent Fox, like president of Mexico, was basically giving his reassurance to Harper that they wouldn't be extradited. But it's sort of like, well, why would they be extradited? Because, like, you know, originally they were, like, suspects, but then, like, they came out and said that they weren't suspects. They were just, like, potentially witnesses. And now they're saying they're suspects again. But, like, the whole thing is like, a total mess. Like, you know, what a yeah. disaster. And then, of course, Fox, like, came out and said something, I think, yesterday, basically saying, you know, I don't know. He was making comments about the case, right? And Edward Greenspan, the lawyer for the family that of the murder victims, basically said like he's like contaminating the case, like, you know, basically like stop talking, you know, like stop making all the, you know. Apparently, I also understand that photos, forensic photos from the crime scene, were released in a newspaper showing like the people lying in,
yeah,
like,
yeah, they got leaked.
I mean, like, you know, what a disaster, what a total screw up, you know, like the whole thing is a shambles. I mean, you know, shame on them.
There was something else about some Canadians like writing a letter to the press there, like an anonymous letter, like saying to look at other people like as possible.
Oh yeah, I read that in the paper today, and it was like, what does that mean? I mean, you know, like the anonymous letter said, hey, you know, you should look for so and so. I mean, like I just chose to ignore that article because it didn't really make any sense. And, you know, see, I gotta say, the press has had a really bad week for you know, so, like for its image. I think that the press has come out looking really bad this week for various like stories that it's published.
You mean, you know, the Canadian press or the Mexican press?
The Canadian press, not in relation to this case, but I'm just saying in general, like it's sort of, I found it to be like just really transparently self-serving this particular week. I mean, every time they talk about, you know, like Michael Ignatieff, you know, that they're like, oh, well, he's a good candidate because, he's, you know, he talks well to the press, you know, it's just sort of like, I don't know. It's just so transparent that here it is. Ignatieff, born to run. What is striking about the internationally known academic and writer is his confidence, thoroughness, and skill with the media. You know, it's sort of just like, you know, well, we like him because he talks to the media. We don't like Harper because he doesn't talk to the media, you know. So it's,
yeah,
it's sort of like, wow, you know, if that's going to, like, get you in, you know, then...
Right. Well, that brings up two issues. There was one, which was Michael Noctis' like speech. I believe that that was referring to the press conference after that. And yeah. I happened to be there, and I'll tell you a bit about that in a second. But the other thing is that Stephen Harper came out with the new plans for the media regarding cabinet meetings.
Yeah.
And so the way I understand it is traditionally there's scrums outside the doors of the cabinet meetings. But now he wants to move the press like out of, I guess it's on the third floor of the center block, and he wants to move them down to the first floor so that cabinet ministers can basically leave without talking to the press if they want to. And I don't know. Do you have a take on this?
I don't know. It sort of seems like they've been doing a lot of hollering and howling. And the thing is, like, whatever point that they're trying to make kind of gets lost on me, because I just immediately sort of, like, filter it out. You know, like, the sort of, like, you know, self-interested alarm kind of goes off, and, like, everything they say just kind of, like, doesn't reach the brain, you know? So I don't know. I guess I've kind of been, like, you know, a bit of defensive about it, on the grounds that, like, you know, anything they say is, like, tainted by their own, like, you know, like, just...
Right. But what do you think of just the decision in general, as opposed to the media's reaction to it? I mean, obviously, the media's not in favor of it.
I don't know. It's tough to say. I've thought about it, and I guess I don't know what I think about it, because I think I see kind of advantages and disadvantages to it. I think that, you know, my first reaction is, that sounds really ominous, you know. That's kind of scary. But then I started thinking about it a little bit more. Like, well, you know, what does it really mean, though? I mean, just because, like, the press, like, can just do whatever they want all the time, and then they, like, all of a sudden can't, like, do anything that they want. They start hollering about it, and, you know, what does that really mean, you know? It just means that they can't, like, entrap, like, the MPs to, like, slip up and say something so that they have, like, a new story, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what is
like,
you know,
it is a precedent for like 30 years or whatever that they could have this. But to me, the message that is clear is that Stephen Harper really doesn't trust his ministers. And this is like building also on the fact that he banned them from, you know, writing letters to the editors and stuff. And we know that he has perhaps you could call them inexperienced people in his cabinet, a lot of them, which is just the product of circumstance because the Conservatives have been out of power for so long. But it really seems that he doesn't trust them, which is a bit unnerving, I guess, to me.
Well, and the other side is that he also probably doesn't trust the media to reflect, like, you know, the story's accurate. I mean, like, there's always, like, such a contortion to, like, this. I mean, like, I could sit and watch, like, a given event. As you watched you told me yourself, like, the day after the Michael Ignatieff meeting that you were there, you had your own take, and then you read two completely different takes in two different papers, and you didn't think that either of them were particularly, like, you know, true to the spirit of the actual presentation. And so it's sort of like, you know, you just read this stuff, and you're like, well, I gotta, like, just reject, like, at least, you know, two-thirds of it is just being, like, fabricated by the media. I don't know. It's just frustrating, like, the language that they use and the spin that they put on everything. You know, it's just sort of, you know, you really could just use to get, you know, you could use a little bit more factual reporting instead of just, like, you know, ethics czar, you know, and, like...
I don't know if it's... Well, for me, it's not that they're not factual. It's just that they're selective with their facts. And so both report different facts that are true, but they only report half the facts that line up with however they want.
Well, except for the editorials, which are just, like, really, you know, it's just a lot of, you know, just...
Yeah, well, editorials is not journal. Like, it's journalism, but it's not reporting. I mean, it's a totally different standard. Like, editorials are known for that. Like, what we're doing right now is editorializing. We're not journalists. We're not, you know... We don't, like, we're giving our opinions on the facts as opposed to just presenting the facts themselves.
Do you have some more facts that you care to present? Because I'll swing on to the next story here.
Oh, yeah, just actually...
Well, yeah, why don't you talk about...
Yeah, one thing they were talking about, the cabinet meetings, I guess they were trying to spin it as a safety issue, they being the Harper cabinet, and so they were saying...
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't get, like, I mean... you know, like my impersonation, my impression is that it was probably some like side comment that the media is like really just kind of, you know, like latched onto and started saying about how like they were just trying to make it like a public safety issue, you know, kind of thing. And then like the media's crying foul. They're like, whoa, there's not, you know, one reported incident of like a, you know, a reporter or an MP being like injured and blah, 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 you know, so.
Yeah, well, probably, I don't know. Anyway, I would say that this, in conjunction with his like ban on like cabinet members saying stuff, it seems to me that he distrusts his cabinet members more than he distrusts the media. But it's probably a bit of both. In fact, it is a bit of both, frankly. But.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, we'll have to see what happens when actually like the real kind of meat of the issue starts coming out. Like so far, it's just been a lot of like just hollow, you know, sort of sensational, you know, like they were talking about Harper's vest, like, you know, for like days after his trip to Cancun, you know, just like, you know, they're calling it the like big game hunter look, you know, a nation of vest wearers, you know, and they, you know, like a easy way to hide his like tummy, you know, and then they were criticizing him for not looking enough like Bush and Fox, and then they were criticizing Bush for looking too much like Fox, and it's sort of like, get a life, you know. I mean, you know, Paul Martin sports the fisherman look, you know, whereas like Prime Minister Harper sports like the hunter like look, you know. It's all in the placement of the pockets of the vest that you're wearing, you know. It's,
yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
I don't know.
Anyway, maybe just one last quick thing on the cabinet meeting thing. There was a editorial I read, I think it was in the Globe, and he was basically arguing that if you look at history, often the prime minister wants to distance themselves from cabinet ministers. So as soon as cabinet ministers start messing up, then they want the blame to go on the cabinet minister. And he's basically arguing that by having this real centralized control, that Stephen Harper is basically going to be seen as you know, authorizing everything that the cabinet ministers are doing. And so inherently, if the cabinet ministers mess up, you know, the blame is going to fall square on his shoulders. Whereas he used the example of Jean Chrétien, he managed to sort of distance himself from his cabinet ministers, as opposed to Brian Mulroney, who took approach more like Harper is doing now.
Yeah, well, Chrétien always was good at, like, you know, not like, you know, nothing sticks to him, you know.
Right.
Even the Gomery inquiry, you know, he'd sort of like, I don't know, somehow.
Well, it's sticking so far, but.
Well, sort of, but I mean, he came out like really defiant, you know. He's like, "Oh, yeah. Not
well,
my fault."
There's,
you know,
a case about it. He sued them, so yeah, so. That would be heard sometime in the future.
Afghanistan. One dreamed of Afghanistan joining the 20th century. The other preferred something resembling the 14th century with cell phones. Says the citizen regarding the like Islamic theocracy versus the like liberal Democrats of like the new budding country, and they like their point is that, you know, you have these two sides to like the country that you know, both have representation in the new constitution but are both sort of opposed to each other and like can't function. So as they said, you know, you can't split the difference and meet in say the 18th century. So the article, you know, so they basically said that the liberal Democrats kind of like, you know, to sort of make it work, gave a lot of the like coveted clauses of the constitution to theocrats. So for example, Article 1 begins, Afghanistan is an Islamic republic. And then they also got Article 2, the religion of the state of the Republic of Afghanistan is the sacred religion of Islam. Followers of other religions are free to express their faith and perform their religious rites within the limits of the provision of law. What limits might those be, it says. Then Article 3 says, in Afghanistan, no law can be contrary to the beliefs and provisions of the sacred religion of Islam. So, it sounds like a theocracy, but then you have liberal Democrats getting in things about observing and respecting the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So that would seem to go against the whole court case to have that Christian convert executed, because religious rights and freedoms are contained in United Nations Charter. But then it says, what about torture? That's banned under international law, but Islamic law permits torture under certain circumstances, and in some cases demands it. So, for example, the Quran says that those who commit adultery must, quote, be punished with 100 lashes. So the liberal sections, you know, permit.
So it's a mashup.
It's a mashup, and it's the big question is, you know, what's going to happen? Will the 14th century theocracy or 21st century liberal democracy win? That's the editorial from Wednesday of last week. So it's interesting because basically they were saying that Karzai really like made a fatal compromise, like was the title, like really spent a lot of political capital getting this guy released because, you know, like a lot of the people were really upset that like this guy didn't get executed. And so he kind of really had to sort of, I mean, he was in a tough position to sort of like try to keep the, you know, the West happy, you know, the West being like everyone else, like it's not Islamic or whatever, and then try to like appease his own constituents who wanted this guy, like, you know, to be punished. So it's a tough call. He's walking the line. So hopefully that'll work out for him. So yeah, next story.
Well, maybe while we're talking about Islamic countries, we have Palestine and Canada came out this week. I believe it was the day before that the summit happened between Canada, United States, and Mexico. It might have been the same day as the first day of the summit. But they came out and basically said that they're suspending all funding to the government of Palestine. There is still some money that's going into Palestine through aid, like agencies and organizations. And it's going into the people as opposed to through the government system. And so they're just suspending the money that's actually going to the government. And the reason is, of course, that Hamas won an election, which is an organization that traditionally is a terrorist organization.
It has a terrorist wing to the party, yeah. And I think it's classified in Canada as a terrorist organization. So.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, this is sort of their first forte into politics. Now, I'm not sure where the other countries line up on this. I know that the U.S. suspended sort of diplomatic connections with the Hamas government. I'm not sure if they've actually cut funding yet. And Tony Blair, like, kind of came out and said that he was going to cut it, but I don't think they've actually taken steps to do that.
Well, Israel
cut
it,
Israel. Okay, that's sort of what triggered it. Israel, of course, had an election last week. And, you know, you have Ariel Sharon, who's in a coma. And so right before he went into a coma, he actually split from Lucid, which is the sort of right-wing, you know, very staunch military party with Israel, which he led for a long time.
Yeah, and he's created and new party.
Right, and he started a more moderate party called Kadima. And or Kadima, I'm not sure how you say it. And so the new prime minister came out of that party, out of the more moderate party. And so then the Hamas government basically rejected, you know, the existence of the state of Israel and all that stuff.
Yeah. A lot of that.
Although, however, the prime minister hasn't, and so he's seen as sort of a moderate within Hamas, and so there is some hope that maybe he can help moderate the party. Because, you know, when it's one thing when you're at the sidelines and you can say whatever you want, but when you have your people that are dependent on you, you have mouths to feed. You know, you have to accomplish things as a government, it can work as a moderating force. And so there's a lot of people that are still holding out hope for the Hamas government that it will moderate. But Canada obviously has decided that, you know, they're not going to wait and see. They're going to, you know, as Peter McKay said, you know, they're not going to see a red cent from Canada. And so
did you say that?
Yeah.
That totally sounds like a East Coast expression, you know.
I'm pretty sure that was the expression used, not a red cent.
Oh, man. Yeah, okay. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But, of course, like, you know, we've been following this story for years. Like, our, you know, you can follow this for, like, your whole lifetime and, like, not see an end to the violence in the Middle East. But, Yeah. Speaking of that, by the way, Iran has started its, like, you know, He-Man Master of the Universe posturing lately regarding military force. I guess coming under pressure from the United Nations and, like, increasingly United States making sort of these, like, veiled, you know, threats about military force. Like, Iran has come out and started, like, flexing its military muscles, talking about this... this new missile, I forget what it could do.
Is it a torpedo?
No, well, I'm getting to the torpedo.
Oh, okay.
But no, there was this missile, I forget what, like, it had going for it that was, like, so great. I forget if it was, like, range or if it was, like, speed or what. It was basically touted as, like, you know, like a very capable missile of, like, shooting down, you know, like a surface-to-air, I think, kind of situation. So I guess that was, like, earlier in the week that they were saying, you know, oh, by the way, check out this missile we got, you know, and don't invade us because we got this missile. And so then, like, later, I guess that was yesterday, I think the story was that they've now come out and said they have this new torpedo. And the way that it was reported was that it had the ability to travel very fast. It was all that I was able to get out of it. And that it had that only two countries, like, or rather only one other country in the world had this technology. Now, I assume they're talking about Russia's supercavitation technology, which allows torpedoes to travel at supersonic speeds in the water by, like, basically using this physical phenomenon called supercavitation, which is, like, basically like a sonic boom, only in the water. So what you do is you have your torpedo traveling, and if you can get this cavitating tunnel to form, then basically your torpedo is traveling not, like, in water. It's traveling in a tunnel of, like, a little bit of, like, a, you know, very thin tunnel of steam. So the frictional coefficient is, like, you know, really, really reduced. And right. You can travel basically at you know, like, really high speeds with your torpedo. So anyways, when, like, my cue to suspect that this was the case is when they said that only one other country shares this technology. Now, I know a lot of, I've met a lot of really smart, you know, Iranian academics that are here in Canada. And so, I mean, certainly there's a lot of bright minds, you know, in coming out of that country. But my suspicion is that this is not the kind of technology that they would be developing themselves. So, you know, we know that Russia has a lot of interests in Iran, and that they've, you know, been really keen to help them through other means. They have a submarine fleet that I believe is, you know, basically, you know, purchased from the Russian military. So, you know, I can basically sort of just, like, armchair conjecture that this is this technology that Russia started selling them, which kind of, like, raises concerns about, like, what else Russia is doing to help them, you know, get their military, like, boosted up. And so it's sort of like that's another precarious, like, diplomatic position that the Americans have, like, is with Russia. I think that there was some talk about, like, some documents that came out that were suggesting that the Russians were giving intelligence to the Iraqi military during the early days of the invasion, telling them about, like, where American troop formations were positioned and whatnot. Yeah. And so I think the Americans like were getting really upset about that. But the whole thing is sort of, like, a little bit unclear. So it's probably not, like, a, you know, let's go to war, like, issue over that, you know. But the Americans definitely came out, like I guess last week, and slammed Russia for doing that, so or allegedly doing that, rather. So yeah
it's heating up. It's hard to say what alliances are going to form. It's sort of an interesting problem.
China, Iran,
like, I've been reading
Russia.
This Canadian and game theory book, so they're talking a bit about, like, coalitions and stuff, and it's kind of interesting, like, to see some of the patterns that history moves through. where two countries that basically don't agree with each other, but you know, they have a less of a conflict of interest than with another country. They'll, you know, join a coalition, but then they usually have a falling out, and then you get all sorts of problems.
Yeah,
but,
well, it's the classic, like, you know, me against my brother, me and my brother against my, like, family, you know, like, me and my, like, family against my clan, you know, me and my clan against the world kind of thing.
I've never heard that, but that's interesting.
It's just, you know, you fight amongst... you know, the lowest common denominator, basically. So, I mean, if you have with your traditional enemy a sort of like a higher or greater enemy, then you will band together. So it's the classic, you know, human nature,
right,
kind of thing. So, you know, and it works
so
at
you
the
see
state
it,
level too.
Like, for example, with World War II, you know, us and communist USSR, we joined together to fight the Nazis. Once we beat them, then we had a huge falling out, and you know, that started the Cold War. So it was us against the Russians, right, or the USSR.
Oh yeah, you know? but the whole Soviet thing, like, went way, or the whole communist thing went way back to the turn of the century. That, like, you know, Canada was, like, you know, crushing, like, communist, like, demonstrations in Canada, like, early on before the war and stuff. So there was a lot of big fear about the commies, like, way back when. So,
oh yeah, I'm not saying that there wasn't, but things, like, heated up once, you know, we had united together, fought a war, and won, type of thing.
But I mean, the Cold War was just basically like a proxy war, like an arms race, and the winner of the arms race won the Cold War, kind of thing. And
well, in some areas of the world, but then the second, like, the second theme is that, you know, we united with, say, Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, and that was an actual fight between them and, you know, the Russians. And when
the
Berlin Wall fell and when the USSR fell, you know, bin Laden said, oh, you know, that it's a triumph of Islam. The West is saying, oh, no, it's a triumph of, you know, democracy. And then now we're in, like, this war with on terrorism, which is essentially on, you know, Al-Qaeda.
It'll be interesting to see if the whole Iran and North Korea axis of evil, like, thing gets to the boiling point, you know, where Russia will, like, fall, like, where, you know, where their, like, alliance will fall, kind of thing. You know, they kind of, they don't, you know, certainly they don't belong in the, you know, classic Islam kind of, you know, pan-Islam state mentality, but they also don't want to associate themselves entirely with Europe either, so.
Right, absolutely, and that's another, like, example of, you know, a coalition that's fundamentally unstable, that's, you know, they're just together to fight the greater evil to them, which is the West.
So,
and I mean, you could construe to a certain point that our relationship with China is similar too, but you know, that's maybe a topic for another day.
I heard someone was telling me recently that they have this theory that when the Chinese economy gets really going and cooking on fire, sort of thing, that all the cheap labor that all of the, like, U.S. manufacturing enjoys today will not be there. So it's going to, like, you know, mess up trade to the States, but that China is going to basically farm out all of their stuff to Africa. So Africa will be the new China, kind of thing. And, you know, it's an interesting theory. I don't know if that would honestly work, but, you know, so they, you know, the Chinese would be in search of cheap labor. So they would start setting up factories in Africa, you know, to get,
right,
you know, the cheap labor, you know, to make, like, the textiles and the electronics and whatnot. But, I don't know. It sounds like a while off, you know. So.
Yeah. Well, the way I understand it, also, the United States is trying to improve relations with India, kind of for the same reason.
Yeah.
And so we have, you know, the non-proliferation treaty, which India didn't sign, and now Bush is going to, you know, support their nuclear program despite that. You know, that's meant to improve relations with India, who also has a very, you know, hot economy. Their economy, I think, is faster growing than China at the moment, but that's just because it's starting from such a starting point that's so far behind. But so, yeah, it would be interesting. China's also floating a lot of money to the United States. They have a huge trade deficit to China, and it's mostly to China and Chinese investors that that are basically paying for, you know, the account balance on America's trade deficit currently. And so that, you know, that's a problem. I think, anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you know, it, hopefully, you know, we won't see any big wars over this, you know, at least, you know, in our lifetime, yeah. Hopefully. I don't know.
Although the chairperson, the federal chairman, like Alan Greenspan's successor, Ben Bernanke, I believe he doesn't really think it's a big problem. And he had a funny way of spinning it. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, yeah, I can't remember. So why don't we move on?
Yeah, so did you want to talk about Michael Ignatieff's speech?
Oh, yeah. So I went to the speech. Now, I'm familiar with Ignatieff's works. I've read some of his books, and so I sort of knew what I was expecting. It wasn't a political speech. It was sort of a half political speech, half academic lecture. He spent a lot of time talking about, you know, where he was born and how he grew up and stuff. And I'll link to the actual speech itself on the blog. But so basically, as far as the speech, it didn't really change my mind one way or another about him. I think he's, you know, intelligent. He's smart. He's capable of, you know, being a good leader, but I'm not sure if he's going to line up on the issues right for the Liberal Party to really elect him. And so we'll wait and see. He seems to be well connected as well. But what was interesting to me was sort of the media's take on the speech. And there's a piece in the Globe and Mail which was just like full of praise for him. And then there's another piece that I first saw it on Canada.com, which is, you know, they run the National Post and stuff. But I think it actually came out of the Canadian Press. And it just focused on like all the like negative and like controversial elements, and it basically didn't address his speech at all. It just addressed like the question and answer period after, and it was, there were protesters as well there, and he actually did a pretty good job handling the protesters. That was like one of the high points, where he basically modified his speech on the fly to basically say, you know, I accept the fact that there are protesters in the hall, and, you know, I respect their freedom of expression and that type of thing, which was a pretty good move on his part. But you can read the speech for yourself.
Because they were protesting, like they were wearing the like orange, you know, Guantanamo Bay like prisoner, you know, jumpsuits,
right,
kind of thing. And so I think he made some comment about like, well, don't I like, you know, respect the like human rights violations issues because that's what I've like basically devoted my like career to, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, so he wrote an article for The New Yorker, I believe, and he took a sort of ambiguous stance on torture, and a lot of people interpreted it as at least in support of what's been called soft torture, you know. The idea of, you know, the prisoners wearing hoods is a good example. I don't think there's different words for it, like coercive interrogation and stuff like that. It's not torture perhaps in the traditional sense, but it's a form of torture.
Well, and, the thing is, like, the West, like, you know, the people in the West, I guess the thing is, they're not familiar with what all is out there in terms of like the torture toolkit. So when they hear about some sort of like more simple, you know, sort of coercive tactics like in interrogation, they you know, will usually react to be like torture, like for example, sleep deprivation. I've heard that being used as a form, you know, people describing, yeah, it as torture. I mean, the thing is, like, if you take William Sampson, who was, you know, tortured, you know, when he was over in, I guess, where was it that he was, Saudi or?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Anyways, he was detained for several months and tortured. And, like, when they, you know, in that case, like, they were using, you know, sort of like more advanced torture techniques. So what they did, for example, was the key to torture in the case of in the case of William Sampson's case was that they were trying to torture him so that he didn't appear to be tortured, so that they would inflict bodily harm to him that would not create bruises, so that when and eventually he was released, they wouldn't be able to tell. So they used to beat him on the soles of his feet, which like he describes as being extremely painful, but it wouldn't leave marks. So eventually, when he was released, they took him to this, I guess, special ultrasound laboratory that can detect the scar tissue, the subdermal scar tissue of this, like, form of torture using, like, you know, sensitive ultrasound. And so they were able to, like, independently corroborate, like, his claims that he was being tortured, kind of thing, through that kind of thing. But otherwise, he appeared to be unscathed. So, I mean, you know, when you line that up against something like, you know, not letting people sleep to kind of confuse them to get them to spill the beans, it's sort of, I don't know, it's kind of what is considered interrogation and what is considered torture. I mean, it is a good question. And my sense is that Michael Ignatieff was trying to make a distinction on that level, as opposed to, you know, sort of him saying, like, oh, I believe in the old cattle prod, like, technique. I don't think that that's what he was saying by any standard. I mean, you know, if you just, like, I guess if you read his stuff, you don't get that impression that he's, you know, like, oh yeah, I'm into the whole, like, I mean, you know, they put Samson, like, on this, like, pole, you know, and they, like, tied his, like, you know, like, basically they bring your knees to your chin, and then they bring your arms behind, you know, your back, and they slide this pole through your legs so that you're kind of, like, on this pole, and then they kind of raise you up, and then, you know, they were doing all this stuff to him, right? And so it's kind of, you know, I mean, there's a wide range of techniques that you can use, and some of them, you know, so I think he's just trying to make the distinction between, like, soft torture.
Well, I think he came out and basically clarified his position that he wasn't even for, like, some of the softer forms of interrogation. But there's also, basically, I mean, it's a very complicated subject, and there's also a difference between whether we should practice torture or whether we should intervene to prevent torture being practiced in other countries. You know, there's so many, like, issues involved with it. So, but basically, yeah, some protesters took, you know, they basically took this big complicated subject and his stance on it and reduced it to two sentences on a cardboard sign, and I think they got it wrong, but anyway.
By the way, man, you remember that prank you pulled on me last night with MSN?
Oh, yes.
And you sent me that, like, little, like, pretend virus that was doing the unauthorized transfer? I have a colleague in London, England right now who's trying to send me, like, some kind of, it's called, like, notavirus.script, and he's like, come on, man, open it. And so I sent him the little animated virus gif that you sent me, like, you know, to sort of get him back, you know, just now while we've been talking, so.
That's fun.
That doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Yeah, anyway, while we were talking, I was also checking CBC, and it appears that Peter Milligan is the new Speaker House.
Yay!
So, yeah, that's good.
I'm sure the honorable members want to hear the answer, and if I could just have some order.
So my understanding is he just adjourns the House of Commons for the day, and then tomorrow we'll have the throne speech.
Cool. So, yeah, I guess that's it. Like, do you have anything else you want to say?
I think that's about it, too. Oh, I was going to link to, there's a piece on Slate about the different types of torture, and it's, like, pretty good, so I'll link to that. But anyway.
Yeah, definitely interesting to check out, you know. You know, good cop, bad cop, is that torture? You know, the classic, like, that's psychological torture, like, technically, you know.
Right.
Is it? You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess, like, I guess I don't have enough experience, like, with that to really know what the difference is, you know. I mean.
Right. Oh, yeah. The other thing I was going to say is I don't believe in torture. But the one of the reasons is that I just don't think it's effective. I think it's good at getting information leaked, but it's not good at getting correct information leaked. And so, like, very often people will tell you stuff, but they'll make things up just so you stop torturing them. And by the time you put all your resources into investigating it, I mean, you're no further ahead. You're actually behind. And so, you know, that's my take. But anyway.
Yeah. Like, did you ever see Hearts War? It's with, like, Bruce Willis, and it's about a Nazi concentration camp and, like, the American soldiers.
Yeah, I've never seen it. And anyways, I know the movie you're referring to.
Yeah. In that one, like, they were all, you know, tortured, you know, like, in the movie by, like, the Nazis, and the story's told from, like, the perspective of this new guy that goes, and, like, he shows up at the camp, and then, like, Bruce Willis is like, did you talk? And he's like, no, I didn't talk. I, like, you know, but, like, secretly everyone that was in that camp was there because they finally talked, kind of thing. So, like, they knew that if, you you know, they knew he talked. That's why he was there, kind of thing. But right. he just basically said a bunch of, you know, stuff that wasn't correct. And so, yeah, you will say anything. I mean, if you ever get a chance to, like, read any of Bill Sampson or listen to any of his interviews, I mean, he's just an average guy who went through this, but he has, like, an incredibly profound, like, sort of philosophical take on the matter of, like, what it means to sort of get, like, you know, to be broken, basically, to be sort of, like, worn down to the point where you're willing to do and say anything. And that's what happened to him, was that they wore him down until he was ready to admit to, like, committing a bomb that he did not actually do. And so, you know, he talks about, like, how he sort of, like, hung on to his, like, sort of sanity, this, like, this little deep down kernel, you know, just, you know, buried deep down there that they could never really take away from him, and then how he kind of came back from that. And it's really, really, like, interesting, you know, stuff. So, you know, definitely check that out. So.
Yeah, I believe also John McCain, who's a senator in the United States and probably the top candidate for the Republican nomination, I think he was tortured as well, too. And if I remember correctly, he gave them, like, they asked for names, and he gave them, like, the front line of, like, some football team or something, like, as a result. But.
I remember there was this Time Magazine cover. I think it was during the Vietnam War, and it was a photograph of this American soldier, and he's sitting on a bench in this, like, kind of, you know, big empty concrete room, and he kind of has, like, he's kind of got his hands down by his, like, groin area, and he's, like, flipping off the camera, right? And it kind of, you know, like a baseball, like, catcher's, like, symbol kind of thing, like, given, you know. Mm-hmm. And the way he explained it was, is that his captors were trying to create this, like, false sense of propaganda for the West, saying that they have these prisoners and they're being treated well, but meanwhile the whole thing was a farce. And so that he felt that he had to try to communicate to the West that he was not okay, and so he chose to use, like, the middle finger as, like, a cultural symbol that the Viet Cong soldiers wouldn't, like, you know right away, like, be able to sort of say, oh, hey, he's trying to send a message that, you know, he was in fact not okay, and that he was not, like, there, you know, and being treated well, like, as they were, like, trying to claim to the contrary kind of thing. So right. It's sort of, you know, another interesting anecdote that doesn't have any relevance. So. But yeah.
Hello, what are we at as far as time?
55.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe we should wrap it up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's also Colin Mays, who, like, he's a conservative, and he suggested that bad journalists be jailed. And his quote was, maybe it is time that we hauled off in handcuffs reporters that fabricate stories or twist information or even falsely accuse citizens. And may I remind him that, you know, his political party has probably done all three of those things, like, not just their political party, but, like, most of the political parties.
What's his party?
Well, he's a conservative, so, you know, okay. You have, like, Brian Pollister, like, getting up and, like, saying all this stuff that, like...
Yeah.
It's like about David Dingwall and people who, like, eventually get exonerated. But.
Yeah, that's, like, that's not okay. This guy, like, is...
Oh, yeah, and he came out and apologized. I should clarify that, too. So he retracted. And what's kind of funny is that...
So it was a beer actually, and popcorn moment? Is that what we're saying?
Like, yeah, you know, kind
of. Sort of like, whoopsie!
But he actually published this as an op-ed in a newspaper. Okay, so you could argue that he was performing the act of journalism, and so he's basically saying bad journalists should be jailed, and then he says, oh, I'm a bad journalist because I said this. So maybe by his own, like, rule, he should be jailed. But.
Yeah, I mean, you know, take me back to the old, like, gulag days, you know, like, what are you in for? Oh, well, I stopped clapping at Stalin's, like, speech too soon, and, you know, so here I am, you know, like, what is he thinking? I don't know, but, I mean, bad journalism should be, like, yeah, at least punished in the subscriptions, you know, or in the advertising dollars, at the very least, so.
Yeah, that's a more democratic way of handling it.
Yep. Yeah, tune in next week. We're going to have our, like, recap of the first, like, you know, question period, and, you know, hopefully get some good quotes in there. The theme music is by Le Mundial. You check them out online at lemundial.net, brought to you by Creative Commons Licensing. And Jeremy and I are conversing today over Google Talk, and, you know, we choose to overlook their human rights violations today. I'm going to cut that out.
Leave it in. It's good.
All right. Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. See you next time, Jeremy.
All right. Take care.
Bye. Bye.
be denied. There's so many ways. No one of them maybe is the best. If you keep on thinking, thinking like that, gonna scratch your same for same.